Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 698, Envoy, recorded live on September 5th, 2019. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are back after a week hiatus because of me being at Outpost. And we have another book that we're going to be talking about tonight. I finished another one!
Yay!
Yay!
Dust finished the book!
Yes. Slowly catching up.
Very
Emphasis
slowly.
On the word slowly.
Very but slowly.
Now I'm what, six books, seven books behind? And there's another one coming out next month?
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Anyways, so we're back. And I did tease a little bit on Twitter that I was going to show off something a little special I got. So for those on the live stream, you may have noticed I'm wearing something rather Outpost-like. So DJ actually managed to get me a couple of the official Outpost jerseys.
Cool.
So I am one of the only people who are not staff or mixer partners to get a jersey. And I didn't get just the normal green staff jersey. I also got the 405th jersey, the blue one. So DJ,
that doesn't look like it's going to fit me, Dust.
Huh?
So that didn't look like it's going to fit me.
I don't think it's going to fit you either, unfortunately. So, DJ brought me up on
4XL.
Stage.
4XL. Remember that. 4XL.
Yes, I remember. I still have to send you your Podtacular t-shirt. Unfortunately, that's only 3X, though. But DJ was kind enough, and as a thank you to all the content that I made for Outpost this summer and all the game show stuff, this was his token of appreciation, was getting me both of these jerseys, which I'm very thankful for and very appreciative. So, DJ, if you're listening again, thank you so much for these. They mean a lot. Your friendship means a lot to me, and I had a lot of fun this summer. We'll talk about Outpost a little bit more on the next episode. We got plenty of news to go through and Envoy to talk about, and we'll have a couple of different guests on throughout the next month to talk about Outpost. We had someone that we met in Chicago who attempted to run the Pelican Trainer solo. So we're going to try to get him on the show. We also have DJ and John Friend. We're going to try to get back on the show and get their impressions on how they felt Outpost went, what changes they're thinking about bringing to Outpost if they decide to do it again, lessons learned, and all that kind of stuff. So both of them have said that they're more than willing to be on the show. So at some point this month, we're going to try to get them scheduled onto the show. And we've got a lot of other things to hopefully bring up again on the podcast, since now I'm not being sidetracked by Outpost. At least we can hope. So more books, more guests, more fun topics leading into Infinite's release, and some more guests from around the community and around people that I've been able to meet up with for Outpost. There will probably be several Outpost-related podcasts throughout the rest of the year, just as we kind of catch up on things. But first things first, we have our housekeeping, which involves first going over to GT and getting a little recap on how our game nights went for the past couple of weeks. So how did we do?
Oh, we've had a lot of fun. The little Timmy the Whale custom game's popular for the break.
Oh, that's good.
It helps keep people entertained while I have to go stretch and use the restroom. And and if, you know, if somebody wants to get up and get away from their monitor, it's not detrimental to everybody.
Right.
So it's a good intermission game, it seems like. I found a new one that I don't know if I want to try it or not. Four-way Rochambeau.
I saw a tweet about that.
Yeah. I Spiteful did a video on it.
Yes.
A four-way, four-team Rochambeau.
I'm interested in trying that.
I've thought about it.
You don't seem too impressed.
It could be interesting.
As most things in Halo can be, interesting is definitely one of them.
That is definitely one of those that you want to have a full lobby to play. To get the full effect.
Well, I guess you could do 3-on-3 if you had to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You could.
So either 12 or 16 or balanced teams of in between.
Yeah. I don't think I would play it with any less than 12 people. Because any less than 12 people, then it's just Rochambeau stretched out.
Makes sense.
Anything less than that, it just doesn't make sense to play that one. But anyway, all in all, we've had a lot of fun.
Good.
We've had a good mix. Super Fiesta, a little bit of Warzone. We closed out with Vehicle Fiesta last week, I believe it was. So we had a lot of fun.
That's good. So for the achievement streams, that was 2 weeks ago. I actually managed to get some achievements. Laird and I managed to finish out the part-time on Heroic and Gold for the campaign in Definitive Edition of Halo Wars. So got that all cleared out, and pretty much every achievement from here on out for Definitive Edition is just getting multiplayer stuff, which mostly revolves around mission victories, which we've just been grinding. We've almost got Laird all the way to 100, so we just got to get me all the way to 100. But the four achievements that I got a couple weeks ago were Mr. Punctual, which is finishing all missions under part-time on Heroic difficulty. Wall of Recognition, which is getting a gold medal on every campaign mission. Our Own Worst Enemy, getting a gold medal with all debuff skulls active. And Officer on Deck, which is winning 20 skirmish or multiplayer matches. So I managed to get four of them a couple weeks ago.
That's cool.
Yeah. So thanks, Laird, for all your help. Appreciate it. We'll be probably grinding the rest of the multiplayer stuff off stream. Whatever might be a little more entertaining on stream, we'll probably look into. But if that's the only stuff left for Definitive Edition, then I might go back to Halo Wars 2 and try to get Bobby wrapped back into streaming on Sunday if he's available. And if that isn't an option, then I might jump over to either back to MCC or to the top-down shooter. So either Spartan Strike or Spartan Assault. We'll have to see how things play out with that. But I do still plan on doing achievement streams on Sunday nights. So you can come on over to our streams, catch me playing some achievements with the community. At some point, I got to do those Halo 3 ones as well.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Not going to look forward to that one. At some point, too, I hope to get Tactical Tuesday or something like that back up. So me, Keys, Bobby, and Confal can actually practice. So by the time the next Halo Bowl comes around, we're not complete crap like we have been for the past two.
Here's the big question. Is the next Halo Bowl going to be on Halo 5, or is it going to be, you going to hold off for Infinite?
It will likely be Halo 5.
Well, then I guess you guys really should practice it then.
Yes, probably. Pins, as far as laser runs go, I'm not sure what I'm going to do for that. I'm contemplating doing the trick where we just get someone who has the last checkpoints and just running through that last checkpoint and finishing it off there just for the achievement's sake. I'm thinking about at least doing one game on Lazo and then maybe shortcutting the rest.
Yeah, that'll be a good 5-hour stream.
You mean 5-day stream?
5 1-hour streams? Yeah.
I have a lot of speedrunning videos to watch and a lot of Lazo videos to watch to get that stuff done. I could probably do it if I really wanted to. I don't know if I really want to is the problem. So we'll see.
The nice thing on 360 is that I only had to grind through the laser runs once. And then I had actually separate USB sticks that each had a game save on it. And what I would do is I'd load up the mission and then pull the memory stick out, complete the level, and that way it would never
overwrite the save.
Yeah, I'd never overwrite the save.
It's not a bad idea. You can only do that on 360, though.
Yeah, you can't do that on Xbox One.
There were only achievements for doing a mission on Lazo, I thought, in some of the previous ones. I didn't think there was any achievements for doing the whole game on Lazo. For any previous
No, Halo that game. Was for... Actually, that was in Reach. Reach and Halo 4 for...
challenges?
The challenges. That's what it was.
Yep.
Makes yeah, there sense. Was. No, I don't think there was any achievements in either one of them for doing any missions on Lazo. Or as the Lazo community calls it, Mythic difficulty.
Right, Mythic is the one without... Mythic has no blind skull. Lazo is with blind skull. The original Lazo had blind skull enabled, though. The original Lazo.
Well, yeah, Halo 4, it was Mythic because they didn't take the... They didn't make you use the blind skull.
They didn't handicap you that much. The blind skull is a big handicap.
A piece of tape and a Sharpie fixes that.
Well, not just for the reticle. You have all your stats, so your health and what weapons you have, how many grenades you have, motion tracker.
Like I said, the biggest problem is the reticle.
Yeah.
If you have the reticle, you can listen to the audio cues for the rest of it. Because that is the one thing I do like about Halo. Every single thing has its own audio cue.
True.
You know, the different grenades sound different when you switch to them. Weapons can be challenging because some of them sound a lot alike. But as long as you know what you have and, you know, keep in mind which one you have out, then it's not a problem.
Yeah.
The health thing is you kind of get a feel, you know, after you've played for a little bit, you kind of get a feel for where your health is. And that only really matters in games like Halo Reach, where you have to pick up health packs.
Right, in Halo 1.
Yeah.
Or Halo 1 Anniversary, technically. Yeah. Because the original did not have skulls.
Right. But... You know, that's the only time that, you know, you really need to monitor your health. All the rest of the time, you just need to monitor your shields, and that's pretty easy, because when they're down, it's beeping at you. And when they recharge, you get the recharge sound. So that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I haven't been brave enough to do Lazo on anything for a while.
Well, at some point, I'll make an attempt. Enjoying
my sanity.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's jump into some news. We've got four different articles on Waypoint to catch up on from the last couple of weeks since we've been off. So first one is a summer scoop.
A scoop.
What this one is. Scoop. We've got a little bit of an update. We've kind of talked about some of this stuff already. The Gears 5 Halo Reach character pack we talked about last time. I also mentioned the very last outpost discovery location and the Sea of Thieves thing where you could get the ship skin again. And then they also mentioned having MCC on PC at Gamescom. And they also mentioned the Fireflight. On here, I think they specified the thing that Postums mentioned about doing another round of flighting for Firefight. I think they said there's a possibility to expand the flighting for Firefight Round 2.
I hope so, because I'd really like to play it.
I would, too.
And there's already been an unofficial big team battle in Reach. Somebody has already modded the beta, or whatever you want to call it, the flight.
Who?
And they were playing... Who do you think?
Game Cheat.
Exactly. Basically, all he did is he went in and modded the Firefight flight to delete the AI and turn the two maps that they use into big team battle maps. If you've got the tools, it's I mean, it is Halo Reach, so the tools are out there. It's not like it's a new game that has no tools yet.
I'm just impressed how quickly he can do some of that stuff.
Well, I guess a lot has to do with how hard it is to implement.
Yeah, and I don't know how... Well, I'm guessing the tool set's probably very similar, and he's modded Reach enough mm-hmm. where he probably knew what to look for and what to do to get it to work.
Probably. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting into the next flight.
It would be interesting doing Big Team on Beachhead, because that wasn't the multiplayer map in Reach.
Nope.
So now we get to the fun, juicy new stuff that we have in this update. First up is the MCC file collection that they did. So they collected all the game modes and the maps, and there's still some work to be done, obviously, until the maps can be made available, and until Reach comes to PC or Xbox, we're not really going to get any of them anyways. But they said there's still more work they need to do with the current version of MCC, but for Reach and 3 and 4, they still plan on having that content available when those games launch on PC. Something to note, though, is when you want to pull your maps into MCC on PC, you will first have to load them in on Xbox after the appropriate update goes live for the particular game. And that'll save the files locally to your Xbox. And then you have to upload them to your file share and then download them to your PC.
I wonder if they're going to implement some type of file browser.
I'm really curious to see how they're going to change stuff, because I think there's a lot of things they need to change on MCC before this file transfer thing happens. Like a file browser. Like expanded file storage.
It doesn't even have to be in the game. If they could just put something on like the website to where you can bookmark or queue up downloads to the Xbox like it used to be able to do.
That'd be nice.
You know, that would be acceptable as well. And then they also need to severely increase the number of maps that you can download for MCC. At minimum, 400 slots. At minimum.
With 3, Reach, and 4 having been able to transfer basically a total of 50 for each one, you at least need 150. At least. Add to the 50 that you can currently have, so you need at least 200. To not overwrite anything.
Right. Like I said, 400 would, 300 would give you 100 maps, 100 game types.
Plus 100 for anything else?
For each game. If you had 300 slots, because it's total for MCC, it's not just per game. You only get 50 slots for the whole game.
Right.
So...
You just said 100 slots for game modes and 100 for maps. Yeah, so where's the other 100 that you want to put?
No, I mean per game. Yeah. I would recommend at least 100 slots per game, which would be 300 total.
Right. 3, 4, and Reach.
Yeah. So I'd give you 100 per game would give you 50 maps, 50 game types.
So basically doubling the capacity on what it was on Xbox or Xbox 360.
No, on Xbox you could have 100.
I mean file share, sorry.
No,
like the file share was limited to 24.
Right.
On 3 and Reach, and then it was 25 on Halo 4. But yes, local.
Which bites, because I was only able to get 25 maps uploaded. Or 24 on per each account. Or for each game.
On Halo Reach and Halo 4, you could have more than 100, I thought. On local files. Not on files.
File share.
No, on file share, but local files.
Yeah, local files, but not on file share. Well, Halo 3, I didn't have any to upload anyway. They're all gone, so. But, you know, like Halo 4, yeah, and that was a joke. I don't know what the heck was going on, but it took me an hour to get those damn things loaded up on my file share.
That file duplication and file reading bug has been in Halo 4 since it launched.
Yeah, I know. It has not got any better. There was actually a couple of them that I wanted to upload that just would not upload. No matter what I did, they would not upload.
Even after changing descriptions or resaving? There were a couple of those I ran into. I had to change description or file name or the author because they were not allowed on Xbox Live in order to get them up there.
Yeah.
I did get all the mole maps converted over whenever I decide to get that thing finished. That's my next project to tackle. My next Halo project to tackle. But I don't know where my very first Forge map I made was in Halo 3. I attempted to remake Chiron in Foundry. I don't know what Xbox I did it on. I don't know what hard drive or thumb drive or wherever that map is. But I couldn't find that one. So I'll probably try to recreate it at some point. See how it goes.
Well, see, you got to do that in Halo 5 now. That way you be up to date-ish.
Someone's
probably already done it, but...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Someone's probably already remade it.
Well, if I remember right, somebody remade it in Halo 3 anyway. It was already been done, but unfortunately, right now there is no way to find that out.
Yeah.
Because we have no way to browse maps or game types. easy way.
Right. Summer season is done, which means this ranked season is now over. So fall starts a new ranking season, so everyone's ranks has been reset. So if you want to go back in and work on your ranks again, now's the time to do so. And we've got our September calendar, finally found it, in this update as well. This past weekend during PAX and during Anaheim, Outpost brought us Rockin' Rails in replacement for Foreigner Slayer and Warzone Turbo. September 3rd, which was Tuesday this week, starts the fall 2019 season, and it brings head-to-head into the ranked playlist for the month. September 5th, Action Sack Refresh goes live, and it is live as of a tweet today. And it rotates in for core play. On September 12th, Anniversary Throwback will rotate in for Rock and Rail. Warzone Assault will also be live for the weekend. Get that some of that double XP grind in there. September 19th, ODST Slayer, which is brand new, rotates in for Action Sack. We've got a little bit of new stuff to work with here.
Mm-hmm.
On September 26th, we have Halo 3 Classic Throwback rotating in for Anniversary Throwback. And Warzone Turbo live for the weekend. So that's what we got in there now. 343 mentions the hidden message that was found by Zephyl in here as well. They also directly link to the file. So if you don't want to go fishing around for it, you can go and look up the file directly in this update. Just based on, I think it was Unishek that wrote this one. Yeah. Based on what Unishek said, some members of the studio expected it to take a lot longer for people to find, but at least it was found. There's supposedly more things hidden in the video.
So keep digging.
The next thing that I'm looking at is whenever Chief has the boot up screen, which seems to be where a lot of the Easter eggs are hidden, there are certain characters that are highlighted within the boot up sequence, and I'm wondering if that has any meaning to it.
Could.
Because I know there's a bunch of Xbox Live codes in there, which all of them have probably been redeemed at this point. But aside from that, with certain ones being highlighted, I'm wondering if that means anything.
Yeah, the 20 that I tried had been.
It sounded like a lot of those codes were gone within minutes of them being shown on the live stream.
It wouldn't surprise me. It didn't even dawn on me that they were Xbox Live codes until the next day. I was so pumped to see an Infinite trailer that the whole Xbox Live thing just blew past me.
Right.
And, really, it was a free month of Game Pass. So.
Mm-hmm. For the promo.
It wouldn't do me any good. So.
Confound, people are just ready for codes. And once they see codes, they just scrape the screen, do character recognition probably and redeem them as quickly as possible. That's probably just what happens.
And the fact that I can't type that fast doesn't help any.
They're not even typing at that point. They're just literally copying and pasting from character recognition software into code redemption. There's a couple more people to join the pro team at 343. We've got Cleet Assault, LaRusso. That's an interesting last name. And he's been a part of quite a few significant teams, such as Status Quo, Team Liquid, Cloud9, and Optic Gaming. We've also got Anthony Magias. I think that's how you say his name. He competed in Halo Reach for Teams Legendary and Team Pure before retiring, switching over to some PC titles. So he's back over on the Halo stuff to work on both Xbox and PC. So that rounds out our pro team to 9 individuals now. We've got Clutch, Hines, L-Town, Baby J, who I don't know, Anthony, Magias, Mikwin, Gregor, Hellhavens, and Assault. Speaking of pro teams, we've got the UGC Halo Classic Atlantic City happening this weekend. There's a lot of events happening, too. There's a Halo CE 2v2, a Halo 3 4v4, a Halo 3 FFA, and a Halo 5 2v2. With over $50,000 of prizing across all four tournaments happening this weekend. You can watch the streams over on mixer.com/UGC events, twitch.tv/UGC, and taking advantage of the brand new live.halo.gg. And this will all be taking place in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So if you're in the area,
wonder if UGC had to set up a Microsoft account.
Yeah, everybody did.
You think they had to wait 24 hours to get their stream key?
If they did it early enough, they probably didn't have to go through the process of requesting it early. Yeah, if they had to, they probably got it escalated and quickly.
Yeah, I'm sure as soon as they hit the submit button, they had it.
Probably. I'm still waiting on ours.
Yeah.
I'm assuming our account's in good standing, so I don't assume it'll take that long.
Speaking of which, I had to check my account. I used my Xbox Live account, so when I signed up for it.
Yeah, I did too. So I believe ours are already set because they're already linked to Microsoft accounts. If you would like to attend the UGC Classic at Atlantic City, the spectator passes are $40 for you to attend. And then registration happens over on ugcesports.gg. There's links within the update if you would still like to register for those tournaments. We've got some MicroStore events happening. The next one is going to be on September 29th, and it'll be a Halo 5 2v2. If you want to register, head on over to smash.gg/MRSHalo. The VODs are up for the FACEIT Ignite Halo European Open as well. All 3 days, so day one, day two, and the grand final, or I guess 2 days. Day one, day two, and then the grand finals are up. Linked in VOD form on the update. As for Halo gear, we get a little bit of a preview into Halo Silent Storm, which is coming out on September 24th. And will again put me one more book behind.
Somebody needs to read faster.
I'm working on it. So there's a little synopsis you can read if you would like to for Halo Oblivion, not Halo Silent Storm. And this is a sequel to Halo Silent Storm. Might be reading that one next. We'll put out a community poll for the next book, and we'll see what the community would like us to read next. We got some radar blips. For Halo 2, there's been a petition going around for support to come back to Halo Wars 2 to fix some things and bring some more DLC. And I believe Postums or someone replied to the community on Twitter, and they kind of had a little bit of recap on his response here in the update, saying that the support for Halo 2 is really not in the place where they're going to be doing any improvements. A lot of that work right now is focused on MCC on PC. So unfortunately, Halo 2 is kind of on the back burner as far as new updates, bug fixes, and all that kind of stuff. They also mentioned the actor and actresses announcements that have been made recently. Mentioned their last community spotlight, and they also had a 343 social stream with Clutch last week. This week it was with Mankey, where people got to get manked, or basically get their MMR ranks live on stream. And then the last update is one of my favorite pieces of artwork. It's Halo 2 artwork with the Arbiter walking right behind Master Chief. This is one of my favorites.
It is a cool looking piece of concept art. It looks like it, or piece of art, not concept, but it looks like it's set in a scene where after they defeat the Flood, and they jump down the hole, and they're walking down the hall.
That's where Halo he 3. Sees
Cortana.
That's Halo 3.
I know, but that's what it reminds me of.
Oh, gotcha. For those of you that are in the live stream, we have this new view. Heyo! Right now my camera doesn't work in the view, but you can see the picture on the live stream now. And you can see all the tabs I have up here as well.
we're working on the delivery of that.
Yes. I figure with the community spotlight, it might be nice to have something like this up today. So still working on that piece. Next up, we have an MCC development update. We've got quite a few little smaller updates to go over as well, so I'm going to hit on those real quick. For last week's update, not this week, we have a little bit of playlist updates kind of overall. So there's some patching that went through some public flighting, and there's some updates that they're looking to bring those flights into the update. Right now, they've got a couple things that they've added. Halo 2 Anniversary Fast Slayer, which involves ranked matchmaking. It's BR starts, 25 kills to win, and a 5-minute time limit.
Wow.
It's fast.
That very fast. Fast game.
Partial team matching is in place, as well as a plus minus 15 rank matching. And then the maps in the playlist are Lockdown, Zenith, Warlord, Shrine, Erupt, by 4chub, Purely Fat. Oh, created by 4chub and Purely Fat. Oracle, created by Squally the Beans, who we had on our Forge panel in Anaheim. So shout outs to Squally. Muskrat, by 4chub and the Psycho Duck. Select, by Secret Snitchel and Renekyard Run. And Stigma, also by Squally the Beans. So Halo 2 Anniversary Fast Slayer in ranked MCC. And then for this week, yesterday we got an update from Postums. And this one is a couple of smaller updates. Some updates to Halo 3 Action Sack with the addition of VIP. So the updates are in Halo 3 4v4 Action Sack and Action Sack. Run for cover on Zeus has been added. And Zeus has a high weighting. Zeus is a high weighting has been applied to this. Okay. So for the map Zeus, there's a high weighting applied to it for Action Sack. That was a mouthful. I'm sorry. Back in the MCC development update, they talk a little bit about the flighting progress, some of the stuff that they're looking forward ahead to. They're linking over to the MCC or the Halo Insider if you're not part of it, because people are still wanting to get in and haven't gotten in. They did say they, for Fireflight, invited 10,000 users along with some additional friends and family from the studio. Across the board, they had roughly 55.5% participation rate.
That doesn't sound good.
Doesn't sound like a lot. Nope. But they said participation is higher than average. So take that for what it's worth. On Saturday, yeah, they saw their highest number of concurrent players at any time during the flight. At one point, they had over 800 players searching with a roughly 24-second wait time to find a match for Firefight. And they had over a 90% success rate for matching players in matchmaking.
That's cool.
Yeah, for a small player pool, that's actually pretty good. The next flight is going to be the Xbox PvP flight. So basically just standard multiplayer. They're hoping to have a little bit more information next week, which is technically this week, on what they're planning on doing for the Xbox flight. So if you want to have a part in it or be potentially selected for it, then you want to definitely go over and sign up for the Halo Insider program. I think aka.ms/Halo Insider will take you to the registration there. There's a little bit of a Q&A between Postums and Michael Farney, who is the senior producer from the publishing team for MCC. There's a couple of different things worth noting in here. They do have a little discussion on the whole memory issue with Xbox One. So kind of expanding on the thing that I can't remember if it was Postums or Scoops brought up as far as the memory constraints with how many engines that they're doing. But they dive into that just a tad bit more. They also talk about some of the other things that they're doing to get reach into the collection as a whole and some of the other PC-specific stuff. And at the next section, we have a little bit of a memo here from the Psycho Duck. Haven't really had a chance to read all through this one, but talking about some quality of life improvements and some milestones that they've made with Reach on PC. So if you want to dive a little bit more into that, then check it out over there. And then we also have a little piece of update from Scoops as well. And we'll get into a little bit more of that next week. But for the most part, there is still stuff being worked on for MCC on Reach for PC and Xbox. So as soon as they have more updates, we'll be getting more. Heading on over to the Action Sack refresh. This is from Unishek, posted today. We mentioned this a little bit already from the September schedule, but we have the full list of Action Sack game modes and maps that are going to be coming to us in the Action Sack refresh. So we have Cannonball Evasion, which is a map and mode together. So it looks like you'll be shooting cannonballs at other ships. Not sure how this one is going to work out necessarily, but looks interesting. I sense a Sea of Thieves crossover here.
You think?
Just a bit. We also have Ground Smashers by Angelitico. And you destroy the ground beneath your enemies. So basically killing or smashing pallets to get your enemies to fall into a fiery pit of lava. We have Knight of the Mantis Versus.
That could be interesting.
This is by Julianas 1224 and Sexy Master Chief. Be the last team standing in a fight for your lives against the mysterious Mantis Horde. So it looks like it's Knight of the Mantis, but there's two lanes. That could be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
There's Pig of the Hill, which was made by Run Knockyard Run and Agent 085. Escort all of the pig to the enemy base and have more players in the hill than the opposing team. So I bet there's some scripting in there.
Probably.
Pyramoid Soccer. This one is created by XSlothX, Spartan Blood 1, Kaweki 22, Bob is Here, and iForge. This one is use your vehicle to score the ball in your opponent's goal to win. The future is now. So, Rocket League in Halo.
Pretty much.
Shift Slayer. Ooh, this is making a comeback. Captain Direwolf, Julianas 1224, and Sexy Master Chief. This is the one where you press your X button and you shift between two different realms, so to speak. And there's a little bit of a cooldown in there built in. So this one's a lot of fun. Have you played this one?
Nope.
LLGT? It's one worth checking
out. First time seen it.
It's interesting. So basically, if you're in one realm and you have players in another realm, there'll be little dots of light. And you have to be in the same realm to attack an opponent.
Huh. I'd be interested to see how they did that.
It's very interesting. It's a lot of fun, too. Stay Off My Lawn by Captain Direwolf. This one's Watch Out for the Lawnmowers. So what's the... So that it feels like Plants vs. Zombies in a way.
Yeah, I think it's more kind of like that Avalanche game type, except for instead of rocks, they have something that looks like a lawnmower coming at you. Or Timmy's.
Yep. Yep. Wizard Duel. This one's by Infinite. And this looks like the dueling chamber from Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
And you have to basically stay on the dueling mat, and there's swords along the way for you to try to knock your enemies off.
With a nice little Prophet Bane right in the middle.
Yes, there is. X-Ball by Infinite, Sexy Master Chief, and Spartan Blood. This is Paintball Evolved. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's Game Night by Spartan Blood 1, Bob is Here, and Koeki 22. Dodge incoming fire to survive the round. So one of those kind of retro game type of things, similar to Duck Hunt.
Hey, Bug Zapper's back.
Bug Zapper, yes. By Little Monk 5. Avoid incoming fire and stay away from the Bug Zapper.
Huh. I'm going to have to check that. Because that one I've had in my file share, or I've had bookmarked for a long time, but it's been broken.
Maybe they've updated it.
I'll have to check.
Gotta grab the new stuff, yeah.
And then you got Duck Run.
Yes, the classic Duck Run. By Sexy Master Chief, Julian Oz 1224, and a Squid Loaf. I think Duck Hunt is pretty self-explanatory, but for those who don't know, you have one person sniping the ducks, and the ducks have to run through obstacle courses to get all the way to the end, and if they do, they have a chance to kill the sniper. Ground Pound Arena. One of the very first Halo 5 original customs is back.
I didn't think it left, but it looks like it's been updated too.
Mm-hmm.
That screenshot looks different than before.
It's gotten a refresh. Originally created by ZZ So ZZ and Patty Freakin, refreshed by Knockyard and Extraterrestrial. There's also Rift Ball, interesting twist on Griff Ball. This one is made by Hitbox Unknown. And that's what we have. There's other mini games being carried forward as well, which include Mongoose Sumo, Paintball, Mantis Breakout, and the original Rift Ball Court, Minotaurs, Diminishing King, Crazy King, and Snowball Fight. That's a pretty big update for Action Sack.
Yeah.
That looks pretty exciting to go into this weekend with.
We may have to go in there and play with some stuff.
Yes. I hope I get to come tomorrow, because that looks like a lot of fun in that playlist. Finally, we have our community spotlight. I'm going to switch over to this fancy new view. Yay!
Yay!
Only downside is you can't see me, which for some people that might be okay. I'm kidding. So we've got a pretty big mashup here from Ascend Hyperion. I could have gotten in this thing. I forgot to send my Spartan over, but he basically took to the community to ask for different armor permutations or character that people have identified with throughout the Halo franchise or renders that they've done or that kind of stuff. And it's just a massive montage of a bunch of different people.
It's like a Spartan clash photo.
Pretty much. You'll see some non-Spartan characters in there, but it is mostly Spartans.
Or should say a Halo class.
Yes. I only see 3 non-Spartans in here at the moment, but it is mostly Spartans. There's also a little 8-bit theme for Halo. Haven't had a chance to check this one out yet, but there's been several Halo theme renditions in 8-bit, so I can only assume it's probably as good as those.
Just think Pitfall and put the Halo theme in there. Remix sounds just like that.
Very nice. What should we go through here? We got some really cool renders, which look like they could be from the game again. It's just insane how good these things are. This one's really cool. The Arbiter and Master Chief with their Halo 5 armor permutations. And then the Master Chief by himself almost looks like an actual picture.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Got some SFMs in here, which are always very cool to see. It's interesting because it's an SFM on the Forge World, yeah, Forge World key art from Halo Reach. So that's an interesting combination of the two. Got Helljumpers, the Master Chief with an eagle on his shoulder, and what looks like kind of the sniper ghillie mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Anything I like up this here? Hunter. You scroll down a little bit further, yep. That hunter, that looks pretty cool.
All contrast.
It's all good stuff. I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, there's nothing here that it is not worthy of praise. It's amazing how much stuff there is every time she does one of these.
There's new stuff every week. It's hard to keep track of it all. So I think that's most of the renders. It's mostly artwork.
Yeah.
From here on for a little bit. This one's interesting with the Spartan floating in space with the broken Halo ring. And I think that's what, Maythrillion? Is that what that's supposed to be?
That would be the Forerunner homeworld. I think it was Maythrillion.
Yep, pins confirmed. Thank you, pins. Trying to work on my Halo knowledge. Oh, that one's really cool. This one with Master Chief looking at our Cortana hologram.
Yeah.
Very reminiscent of the Halo 4 art style and feel. Got the Braille 117 on the armor. And another SFM. This one's from Banowski. I'd like to commission some renders at some point. We got some hand-drawn art, some pencil art, some, looks like we got a couple of watercolors in here. Like this one. Seems to be a watercolor. Looks really pretty. Then this one looks like a pencil drawing. ODST with an elite and a railgun. Oh, that one's cool. That one is just graphite pencil.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones in there.
This one is probably a Spartan 2, maybe not necessarily the Master Chief, but has an assault rifle and a knife up against just a little piece of a wall that's left standing. ODST armor. And then we've got, here's the Halo Outpost stuff. Got some of that and got some tattoos. Are these screenshots? Yeah, these are screenshots. These are all screenshots. That's crazy. It's like a wave effect around the Fotis armor that's all white, pink, and purple. Sorry, recon armor, not ODST for the previous one. Thank you, Westy. Master Chief here. How do you get that effect? That is nuts.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if some of those have been adjusted in Photoshop.
Possibly. Ooh, that one's pretty.
Yeah, they look really good.
I don't think that's a screenshot from... it's from Halo 5. Where in Halo 5 is that? That's Halo 5? How? Where in Halo 5 is that? Oh, that's probably multiplayer. That's not... Actually, that's probably not Master Chief green. That's probably in multiplayer. Okay, that makes more sense.
Well, I'm trying to think where in multiplayer there's Sentinels.
I don't know. Wish we had someone from Forge Hub or something in the chat to tell us where it could be, because it looks like there's the little constructor Sentinels and then the aggressor Sentinels.
Yeah. That would have to be... No, I'll bet you that is. That's probably on the mission where you meet on the planet...
Exuberant?
The builder planet. Yeah.
Genesis,
yeah. I'll bet you that's where that was taken.
Yeah, they don't... The Novellas who took it didn't say where he took it from.
But yeah, I'll bet you that's where it was taken.
Probably then. Yeah, I don't know. That one is hard to pinpoint.
That's the only place it could be, is on Genesis.
People in the chat think that it's still not the Master Chief green. But then how would you get that side animation with his arm down by his side? I don't know. I might have to tweet at him and be like, hey, where'd you take this? Because I can't figure that one out. I really can't figure that one out.
Yeah, I don't either. But I can't think of what multiplayer map that would be on either.
Pens was saying Valhalla, but that doesn't look like a Pelican. The cockpit or not a forging one.
I don't remember any Sentinels being on Valhalla.
No. I think they would just be in campaign. Anyways.
Anyway, yeah.
We got some videos, montages, for the most part. A couple of map reviews. Some
forge art. Forge art.
In one of the videos, or?
No, right there. Scroll down. Down, not up.
Oh, below the videos, yes.
Yes.
Just hadn't gotten there yet. That's an interesting look. Is that supposed to be a cat?
I have no idea.
That's a creepy looking cat. Totoro. Or, yeah. Huh.
I like the fishing scene. That's pretty good.
That's kind of funny. Two elites, a grunt, and the Master Chief fishing for Timmy the Whale. That's cool.
Oh, they actually forged in a mongoose and have the chief sitting in a mongoose.
Oh, that's what that is.
With a, looks like it's he's got a ball in his hand.
Yeah, okay. That's what that is. Cool. And we're on to tweets. Got Dr. Leo coming back with his elite cosplay. Someone made an assault rifle. Securing
343.
Yes, as always. Got an assault rifle made out of... I'm guessing that's probably going to be Legos. Some screenshots. A picture of the photo shoot from Anaheim. I gotta go through my pictures of that. It was really cool. Visor shot of Cortana in Master Chief's helmet. Screenshots from Halo 2 Anniversary. Some more Outpost stuff. A lot more Outpost stuff.
Yeah, lots of Outpost stuff.
Yep. Cosplay.
A legendary cake.
Yes. I think
that's what that is. Yeah.
And Doodle's Snickers. So a couple of her favorites. Is that Japanese or something? I don't even know what language something that like is. It.
Yeah.
That's not the tab I wanted. Let's just click on one of these and see what it says. Translate tweet. Caesar machine. Oh my gosh. What the heck is that? That looks nuts.
Yeah, it does. I guess you step on a dot and it draws a thing to you.
So Caesar machine, this is Japanese. Caesar machine was released. It's a game to defeat the machine attacking two divided teams.
Little video is kind of funny.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, me too.
How they did that?
I wish they had put a link to the game type in their tweet.
Let's see. Did Snicker do the link to it? No. I wonder if this camera tag matches his Twitter handle. Toketake is the Twitter handle. Can't freaking. Oh, yep. His camera tag is Toketake. Toketake. So there you go. You can check it out there. And that wraps up the update. And that means it's time to break for the podcast. So we're going to take a little bit of break. We'll be back in a little bit. So see you guys in a few. Now we're on to the show, or part of the show, that we didn't hope it would take an hour to get here, but we did. So now we try to get through what is probably one of the longest Halo books I've read in a matter of an hour, or however quickly we can get this thing done.
Well, hopefully it's a little faster than that, because I would like to get to bed before midnight.
That's kind of my point. So we're going to try to cram the longest book that I've read into as little time as possible.
Well, I mean, the nice thing about Envoy is it
is kind of a smaller story in the grand scheme.
Yeah, it's a relatively simple story.
Yes. And it's kind of isolated in a way compared to the rest of it. It is kind of a continuation on Gray Team from Contact Harvest, but it's still self-contained.
It finishes the Gray Team storyline.
And leaves it cliffhanger.
Closure to their storyline. And of course, hints towards what's happening in Halo 5.
Right.
But this is a continuation of the story from Fractures, and I am blanking on the name of it right now.
Should have been a short story that I should have read beforehand.
Well, it really, the short story introduces you to this story, but it's not, it doesn't give you any real critical information that applies to Envoy.
Okay.
It's more like a primer, unlike where in like Renegades, where it actually, or not Renegades, but now I can't even think what the name of the book is. I'm looking.
I'm not sure which book you're talking about. Can't help you there. Sorry.
I just finished it. Retribution.
Ah.
Which is kind of a continuation of the Halo Wars story. It follows a certain character's daughter. Anyway.
Okay. Oh, yes. I know which one you're talking about.
Envoy, it's pretty simple. It's basically the expected battle between Sangheili that view the human race differently. You have two leaders on this planet.
Governor Ellis, I forget what her last name is, and then Rojka.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
You need the Halopedia link?
Yeah, if you've got it handy.
I do. Here you go. There's no synopsis on this one, so we're kind of freeballing it.
No synopsis?
No.
Well, that sucks.
And the book's been out for a while, too. Guess people just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, it's possible.
So the premise is pretty much we have the planet Karo.
And you have a major human city, Soraka, which is where the short story kind of takes place.
Okay.
That's the human. Soraka is the human city, and Rak is the Sangheili city.
And the humans were there before the Covenant came and attacked them, and they ran, and they were in a Mars colony. And then by the time they came back, they found that the Sangheili had formed a colony, which was Rak, and they came to repopulate Sakura, and there's a whole peace thing being bargained, and that's where the book picks up with Envoy. And this really threw me off that they called Melody, how you say her last name?
Ezekiwe.
Yeah. It was so confusing having her being called Envoy so often, because I don't really see that in any other Halo novel where you call a position by, or call someone by their position other than a ranked officer or the Master Chief.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah, it is different. But after a little bit, you tend to get used to it. At least I did.
If you say so.
I did. I think the reason they did that is they wanted to differentiate her character from the other human characters, as she's the outsider. You know, she's not part of the so-called in crowd in Soraka. What happens, and what the way the book opens, is the book opens to Sangheili from the city of Rak attacking the humans. They basically attacked. They took out long-range communication, took out any ship with slipspace drive. So humans are pretty much stranded on the planet. And this plays to later in the book. You have two Sangheili leaders, Rojka and Tharz. Rojka is the one that is wanting to make peace with humans because he sees us as a valuable ally in defending the planet and protecting the planet from other sects or people that may want to, attack them. Also, he's trying to fall in line with the Arbiter's doctrine. And Tharz, which is his cousin, opposes him. And he launches an attack with the ships that he controls against Rajka and humans to try to seize power. And basically, in the process of doing this, they wind up destroying their entire fleet, or severely crippling their entire fleet, which inevitably pretty much leaves them defenseless. The fourth party to this is Tharz hires Brutes to help him overthrow Rajka. And the Brute chieftain accepts this job because he has an ulterior motive. He wants to be on the planet for something.
Mm-hmm.
While the battle is going on, Melody, the envoy, when you first meet her, she's trying to get her staff off the ship. The Unwavering Discipline is Raj's ship, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And, so there's a little back and forth. They finally get them launched, and she gives them coordinates for the planet that are outside the city that they're supposed to go to. After that,
You're really jumping ahead.
Not really.
We haven't even gotten to the Demon 3 yet.
If you would just push. We haven't got to the Demon 3 yet. She gets rid of her staff, and then we move into that. Next, she stays behind because she is trying to plead. Yes. Yeah. She stays behind on Unwavering Discipline to try to talk Rajka into releasing Grey Team, which Rajka calls them the Demon 3. And the reason they do that, one, is they called Spartans demons, but these three particular Spartans are responsible for destroying his homeworld, which is why they relocated. They were basically, that's why they moved to this planet, because their home planet was destroyed. So, there's a lot of animosity between the elites and Spartans, and these three Spartans. Rajka originally found them in the debris field because in the attack against his planet, their ship was disabled and they were unable to make it back to human territory, so they went into cryosleep. Rajka found them, and he had been keeping them on the Unwavering Discipline. They really don't nail down a specific time, but the attack happened 6 years before this current date. So they'd been asleep for 6 years.
Yeah, this happened shortly after the peace treaty, basically, between Lord Hood and the Arbiter. And as we learned later, it turns out that Grey Team was out of contact with Oni. They never heard from Oni. And the last thing they heard was the Covenant got to Earth, and they had to make a decision on whether or not to act on the intel that they had. And they took a Nova bomb and blew up Glyke.
Glyke.
I would have never guessed that's how you pronounce that word.
That's the positive of having the audiobooks. You get them to pronounce the stuff for you.
Well, it's funny because I listened to both Podcast Evolved and Halo Completionist before hopping on, and they all said Glyke as well.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the audiobooks are, I would assume, more curated by 343.
Right. Yes.
So if there's a word that they don't know how to say, they probably defer to 343's pronunciation of it. So, but as we'll learn in a later book, that doesn't always apply because one narrator reads it one way, another narrator reads it a different way, which is really irritating. But anyway, It's like, if you're going to have some a different narrator read for the same storyline, they need to listen to the previous audiobook.
So or they just they need to get the authoritative pronunciation from Grimm or Frankie or whoever.
Well, they need to also, you know, go by what has already been established.
Yes.
But there were some inconsistencies in the stories that I'm reading right now. But we'll get onto that next. Well, when we get to those books. So the envoy is pleading with Rajka to release the Demon Three. And of course, he's having nothing to do with that. He wants them to die. It would, you know, does not hurt his feelings at all to let them rot in his cargo hold and they can die with the ship.
Which is kind of funny why he wouldn't just kill them.
Well, he was, as we learn later in the book, he was trying to be clever like a human, as he puts it. And he wanted to use them as a bargaining chip to get something from the UNSC. And that's why he didn't kill them. But what happens next is Melody, or the envoy.
Envoy.
Mm-hmm. We'll just, I'll try to remember to do that so I can keep it straight. The envoy does something that I didn't really expect. She literally goes to one of the weapons vaults on the Sengeli ship and demands to be armed. She stares down. She basically stares down the arms master for that particular arms vault.
Just for a plasma pistol.
And bluffs him, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually pretty plausible. She did it, she basically pulled the honor trick on him. You know, basically said, you're going to deny me the right to die defending my life or something like that. But anyway, she goes in, she picks up some plasma grenades, a plasma pistol, and she finds this Kigyar shield that she saw on the initial tour of the ship, I guess it was. And of course, all the Sengeli are snickering at her because, you know, she's just a human.
Just a pathetic little human.
Yeah, this human's got a brain. Well, from there, she goes to the storage hold where Gray Team is. And of course, Rajka has two of his trusted guards watching the door. And she does something that is actually kind of funny. She takes a plasma grenade, sticks it to the wall, triggers it, runs up to these two guards and basically says, you know, they're boarding back there and there's Ungoy coming through the breach. And then, you know, the grenade goes off and she, you know, her little internal monologue is, please don't let these be the two Sengeli that don't want to get the free kills.
Thankfully they were, and they ran out the door and then they found that
they ran down the hall. And of course she tries to open the door and it's locked. So she shoots the control panel and of course it still isn't open. So she puts a grenade on it, blows a hole in it. And about then you hear the two Sengeli say, there's no one going down here.
They've been tricked.
That was just the icing on the cake for that particular one. Anyway, she darts through the hole. She takes the Kigyar shield, shoves it in a hole, turns it on to block the hole so that nobody can follow her in. And she does a rapid thaw on Gray Team. While she's waiting for that to happen, of course, the Sengeli show up. They try to get the doors open. There's an explosion. The envoy gets hurt. And then you get the where Gray Team wakes up. They spend some time trying to figure out where they are, what's going on. The Sengeli break through the door and, you know, they fight. Of course, Adriana is upset because somebody opened her cryopod and took her weapons.
I mean, I'd be pretty upset too if I woke up and
it's just the way
I was missing something I was expecting.
It's just the way they worded it. It's like somebody took her woogie.
I don't even know what that is.
Your blanket. You know,
you said every woogie, little kid's right? Got
woogie. You know, some people call them woogies or, you know, stuffed animal or something. You know, a lot of
never heard kids have
a blanket or a stuffed animal, right? Well, there's some people, some of them, just one of the things that I've heard kids call them is their woogie. But anyway, that's beside the point. But that's just the way it kind of came across as they said that.
Sure.
Just the inflection that, keep in mind, I'm listening to an audiobook, so there's a lot of things that are said in the book that just having the narrator read it to you with the inflections of their voice changes the way the sentence sounds, or you would respond to the sentence.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Anything you want to talk about at this point?
Just the kind of the whole thing where Rochkow was getting boarded and was trying to stave off Thar's attack, and eventually ship gets disabled. And I think he pretty much covered most of the stuff. I can't remember if there was some dialogue with the folks down on the planet in between here and now, but I know there's some stuff regarding the kind of like how governments run on Cairo from the human side, the Sarakans. But I can't remember if that was mentioned already or if it was mentioned a little bit later.
Well, it's basically all the mentioning they've done so far is, you know, your typical emergency response stuff. Get the leadership in protective custody. They mention the brutes attacking.
That was going to be the other thing. I didn't remember if the brutes went down before.
No, the way this works is the brutes actually were attacking. They were attacking the ships. I believe they had three ships. Two of the ships were in the fight in space. After the odds tipped in Thars's favor, one of the ships with the brute chieftain went down to the planet's surface and parked over the city of Soraka.
Right. And at that point, Thars was like, why are you down there? This is my planet. I didn't.
Well, that's a little later, but anyway.
But yeah, I don't think there's anything else to really, I don't think there's anything else that you've missed that's not super important.
But the Spartans get woke up. They fight their way to the shuttle bay or whatever you want, and they find their drop pod.
They pile in, fighting off the Rajka's group, and then they kind of push back the group of elites that came by, and wasn't Rajka one of the only ones to...
They were fighting the elites in the hangar bay. Some of them were elite, or some of them were allied with Rajka, some of them were allied with Thars. They were originally going to take one of the boarding craft, one of the Ticks, when they spotted their dropship, which its call saying is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
And it was a honeybee.
It was a honey. No.
Bumblebee?
Bumblebee.
Something bee? Bumblebee. That's it.
Yeah.
Which we got to see at Outpost.
No, that was the honeybee.
So they're two separate ships. Okay.
Yeah, they are different ships. The honeybee is a recon ship. The bumblebee is basically a life pod, a big life.
Got it. Honeybee at Outpost, bumblebee in this thing.
Right.
That's not confusing.
Yeah.
Oh, bumblebee is the escape pod from CE. Thanks, Erikibu. Uh-huh. That makes sense. Okay. Got it. Yep. So they hop in that thing and they crash down towards the planet.
Uh huh. And of course they take some fire on the way down. So anyway, they crash. They literally crash and burn. But somebody had a sense of humor when they named the ship. And I'll let everybody just figure it out. Just take a
Whiskey
minute.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
You'll figure it out.
Yes.
It's a point of contention later in the story when the Sorokins hear the distress call from the ship. They're yeah. not exactly sure that it's human and it's not a trap at first, but then they figured out that, yeah, that had to be human.
Because who else would come up with WTF?
Yep. Spartans, you know, they do take the envoy with them, even though she's hurt, and they magically had a can of biofoam in one of their cryopods. Imagine that.
Yay.
They get down to the planet. The next bit of it is Rajka chasing the Demon 3, and then we start to hear more about the Sorokins and their battle. You know, their battle with the chieftain.
Hecabe.
Yeah, Hecabe, yes. And they also tie the Banished into this story a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
You know, just a touch. Like, Hecabe's hammer was supposedly...
Hammer,
what's the name of the hammer?
Oath of Fury.
Oath of Fury. Was actually... he actually took that a chieftain that was allied with the Banished. One of Atriox's top lieutenants or something like that.
Yes.
So, you know, they tied it in there. And they do tie it in again later on, which I'll talk about. And this is where we start to figure out why the brutes are there on the planet. At this point, he is just waiting, or he's down there doing what he needs to do, which is they're clearing out an area because they're actually digging for something. And he's hoping that the Sangheili keep themselves busy with each other for a while.
Yeah.
At this point, the humans in Shiraka are basically in a retreat, getting civilians away from the brutes. They start to probe the brutes' defenses, trying to get information, you know, getting people up in buildings to see what the brutes are doing, trying to get drones over the area or aircraft over the area to take photos and to see what they're doing. We also find out that their backup power supply is a nuclear weapon.
Yep.
Interesting backup generator.
Powering their bunker. They managed to get some arms and other things by some unconventional means.
But they've had some help from the resistance.
Yes.
Or the insurrection.
Wasn't Sapien Sunrise mentioned in here too?
Sapien Sunrise was, and also the other one, the other big one. I can't think of.
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name of it, but basically the one that you hear about in a lot of the organization that you hear about in several of the other books, it's the group of resistance groups or collection of resistance groups.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about, but yeah, I'm drawing a blank at the moment. Someone in chat, help us out. The New Colonial Alliance?
Yeah, Colonial Alliance. That's it. Anyway, we start to, you know, this goes back and forth for a little bit, and then they start to give more information about what Hecabe is actually there looking for.
Because they don't just go into the city and start slaughtering everybody. They're kind of keeping to the edge of a city.
Yeah, they clear out a specific area, and then they stay there.
And they start
digging. Defend that area. And they start digging. Apparently, they have a large quantity of envoy embarked on their ship. They also, this is actually kind of cool, they actually have grunt goblins, except for they're used for digging purposes. They're not weapons platforms.
I do like all these little tie-ins to some of the other stuff that they worked with. It made that other stuff not quite so throwaway.
Yeah.
So, at this point, we have Hecabe digging. We have the Sorakins trying to figure out what to do against the brutes. And we have Rajka chasing down Demon 3 and Thar's chasing after him. Something, I don't think you said this yet, but once the Demon 3 and the Envoy crashed, they started making their way out. But before they did that, Melody, the Envoy, kind of woke up and while they were talking about what to do, because they were going to try to get to the city, but then the Envoy said, no, we should go here. Here are the coordinates. So they backpacked her, and we also start to see a little bit of the dialogue between Great Team on the impact that blowing up Glyke had on them from a team cohesion perspective. And it's just hinted at from here, but we learn later that there was some contention on a decision to blow up Glyke in the first place, or Glyke.
Yeah, the Envoy realizes that just from their body language, because, you know, they're having their own little conversation, Gray Team is, that something's off. And the way they respond to each other, the team is broken. They've lost trust between each other. When it comes to fighting, they're just as lethal as ever. You know, when there's an objective, like self-preservation, stuff like that, or, you know, they have to come together to fight, that's not a problem. The problem they have is, you know, they've never really had a leader. They just kind of all agreed to do the same thing, and Jai was the closest thing that you could come to a leader with the team. It was, he would suggest things and the other two would agree to it type deals. Unless they didn't, like, you know, killing a certain insurrectionist on the rubble.
I should probably mention, in case people don't know who Demon 3 is or Great Team, it's Jai 006, Adriana 111, and Mike 120. All Spartan 2s.
Uh-huh. Yes, they are all Spartan 2s, and they are all troublemakers.
Even in training.
In Spartan training, the reason they are grouped together is Jai and Adriana, for the first several months of training, would escape on a regular basis. And each time they would escape, they'd get a little bit further. And as they got trained, they got a little harder to catch, to the point where they were shooting them with trank darts to avoid injury. That's how wicked these kids got. And
yeah,
I do mean kids. And they basically put Mike with them because he did something similar, but he literally learned to fly a pelican after watching someone do it a couple of times. He stole a pelican and he kind of crashed it. They were all of the same mind. They're very independent thinking Spartans, but they kind of mesh with each other. They work well with each other. Their different talents complement each other.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
But all in all, it's you know, up to this point, it's really just kind of filling in story leading up to the main story of the book, which it's not Primordium long, but it's up there. We get a little bit more backstory on the Sorakin governor and lieutenant governor, which you have
Governor Ellis Gass and Vice Governor Lamar Edwards.
And every time they say Lamar, I'd be looking for a donut.
Okay.
We have a donut shop around here that's Lamar's.
Ah.
Lamar's Donut Shop. Really good donuts. Unfortunately, there's only one left in Kansas City, but
just gotta stay open up long enough before I come up there.
Yeah. You probably don't want to go where they are.
Oh. It's one of those places. Got it.
good food, but not exactly the best part of town. Anyway, let's see, where was I? Oh, you have Elise and the governor going down to the underground facilities, their underground base, where they're starting to plan all this, you know, reaction to the brutes invading. You also learn that Elise's son is part of the militia. And that's how they refer to their army. That's basically, it's not really an army. It's pretty much an all volunteer force. And, you know, it's basically there for civil defense. They do have access to, you know, arms and armament, light and heavy.
They got some really heavy stuff.
Which they have collected from multiple sources, some of them legitimate, most of them not. They have, yeah, they go through and they start planning on what they're going to do. They have an argument about what they're going to do with the, I think they have 8 remaining ships, but the ships that they have are basically tugs. They don't have any kind of slip space drive or anything like that.
Getting they do back, have some hidden ships that they use later on.
Yeah. The reason he is down there is Hecabe came down to the planet, is he's looking for a forerunner structure that is buried underneath Soraka. And this, and about here is where we get to the point where Hecabe, well, see, Thar's chasing Rokchka back down to the planet because as Great Team was escaping, he basically tagged him with a tracking device. And he had been keeping their presence a secret from most of his crew. And basically, he announced that to his crew, and they fought to get Unwavering Discipline's shields back up so that he could follow after the Demon 3 to hunt and kill them. And that's basically what is going on with that. Rajka's hunting the Demon 3, and Thar's is hunting down Rajka. So it's kind of interesting battle.
It's a big game of cat and mouse.
Uh-huh. But back to Hecabe. At this point, we start getting a little bit of information about what he's after. He's after a forerunner structure. And he talks about how, for the brief amount of time that they had power, that he took advantage of it and collected all this information while he had access to it.
From the prophets.
And from the prophets and from
the archives on installation 00, the Ark.
The Ark, yes. He raided a repository or something like that to get a bunch of this information.
So it led him to this foreigner facility, and he also found a foreigner artifact on the Ark, which kind of putting two and two together led him to this foreigner facility, which has some very powerful beings inside, shall we say. Might as well just cut to the chase. There's a legend that went around the Covenant of Sharkoi, which are these very powerful beings. And it was thought to be kind of a legend, thought to be a myth. But it turns out that, and we'll find out kind of why, the prophets were actually kind of holding on secretly to this information as kind of a last resort if they needed to wipe out humanity. Thankfully, it never got to that point.
The deal is the prophets never knew how to control them. They could release them and kind of point them in a direction, but they had no way to actually control them. So they could very easily have wiped out the prophets instead of humanity, if not used properly.
Right. Their plan was to basically transport them to a human
presence
and just let them wreak havoc.
To give you some idea, the Sharkoi, well, it is thought that the Hunter's overall design was based off the Sharkoi. The shark koi are massive.
5 meters tall.
5 meters tall, and they are nothing but muscle.
With a very cyclops appearance.
Yes.
But they don't have an eye. They have a soft sac that's used for echolocation.
Right, and they have a very small head, including a very small brain. They're not that intelligent. They react in their natural habitat. They react more off instinct than they do actual thought. And what happened is the Forerunners went through and surgically altered them to the point where they have little devices in them that a single being can control them.
So think of little like cockroach computer things that can like direct them where to walk and stuff. It's basically like implants.
Yeah.
And I think there was another mention in the book too, where they were not targeted by the flood because they weren't really deemed that intelligent to infect.
Yeah, they don't have a sophisticated enough neural network that where the flood can infect them. You have to have a certain amount of neural activity before you are deemed a good host for the flood, which is, see, this is what kind of rubs me, because even at that, they're still biological creatures, so they could still be used for biomatter to generate infection forms or something like that. But they are absolutely vicious killing machines.
At one point, when Hecabee eventually gets control of them, their fist just pounding on the ground is enough force to be similar to a gravity hammer, or compared to a gravity hammer.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show how massively muscular these things are.
Hecabee is not a small brute. He's one of the larger brutes in his pack. And to put it in his own words, he felt like a whelp standing next to a sharkoi, basically a young child. The sharkoi could encompass his head. He could basically palm a brute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you palm a basketball, a sharkoi can do that with a brute. They have enough, you know, they have an overbite with just razor sharp teeth. They have horny spikes that come out about the wrist. You know, huge, just huge muscular beasts. And
apparently this was stuff, or the sharkoi were concepted for Halo 2, and they were never used.
Correct.
So it kind of
roped
them back in.
Actually one of the creatures that Bungie was going to put in the game to have us fight, but due to development issues, they were dropped.
It was even supposed to be in Halo 1, and it used to be called the Drenobig. Something like that. Yeah, reusing assets.
Yeah. Donuts.
Drenol. Just that's the file name. So while this is all happening, there's kind of the revelation of the sharkoi where Hecabee finds it, but then at the same time, I think this is where Gray Team and the Envoy make it to the Oni facility, and they start to reveal why the Oni facility is there in the first place, and it's monitoring Karo, and what the real threat is that they're having to worry about, which is the sharkoi.
Yeah, this is the point where we start learning about the sharkoi and learning about their capabilities, things like that.
And once they find the Secret Oni facility, I guess they wake Envoy up just enough to, or she was awake enough just to tell them, say this passphrase and be at this these coordinates. And then there's a single Oni guy that comes out and invites them and is acting very un-Oni-like. And then Adriana and the Oni agent at the facility, I forget his name at the moment, but they're trying to pull information out of each other by trying to get each other drunk, which didn't work on either side. And just because of how things were escalating, and eventually the envoy started kind of talking about things which were classified and she shouldn't be talking about, they kind of just came to terms to say, screw it, here's the situation. Sarkoi's a real threat. Hecabee's found it. It's a big problem now. We need to make sure that this doesn't get off the planet. And while this is going on, Rojka has sent out search parties to try to track down where Gray Team has gone. He figured out that they were trying to cover their tracks, so very smartly he said, look for kind of a unnatural path in the sand, because they were in a desert. So they ended up tracking them down, but at the same time, Tharys tracks them down, and circles, encompasses them, and it just so happens that the small group that Rojka has with him are at the entrance of the Oni facility, and they strike up a deal where Rojka says, let me go in and kill the Demon 3, and Tharys says, you can do that, but you must leave the humans alive for me to go in after and take them hostage. From that point,
it's actually Tharys that comes up with the plan. Tharys,
right,
comes up with the plan. You go in, you can kill the Demon 3,
but you must leave the humans alone.
And Tharys also says, I promise that I will not harm the humans. I will come in and act as I'm rescuing them. This is all supposed to be a ploy to make Rojka look like the bad guy and Tharys look like the good guy, even though Tharys is the one that started this whole mess.
Yes.
Which Tharys had very little intention of actually saving the lives of the envoy or anybody else that was in there.
Yep. By the time that, and I don't know if the book really didn't specify, I'm guessing that Rojka managed to get in kind of undetected, and then when Tharys started to come into the base, that's when all the alarms got tripped or something. But the Demon 3 escaped through an underground or other exit point out the back door, basically, with the Warthog, left the envoy and the Oni operative in the base. They wall themselves up in a conference room type of place, and Tharys comes in, and basically after a very short conversation, cuts the Oni agent in half.
Quite literally.
This book is very gory.
Yes, very violent. It is. Very descriptive.
Yes.
But Tharys comes in looking for the Demon 3. He wants to know where they went. And of course, the Oni agent and the envoy refuse to tell him that. And Rojka, the way this works, I believe Rojka, because one of them basically blow the door off the facility with explosives. And I think the way this works is Tharys blows the door off of the facility, or no,
the
wait,
front door, basically.
Rojka blows the door off the facility and then hides, waits for Tharys to go inside, and then follows him in with his active camo on, because Tharys comes charging in expecting to find Rojka there, and he doesn't, and it throws him for a loop. That's why he moves directly to the Demon 3. He wants to know where they went. And Rojka is basically just
hearing,
standing back, waiting to see what Tharys does. And when Tharys kills the Oni agent, he basically comes in and rescues the envoy.
And this is in the middle of her trying to tell or convince Tharys the threat on this planet is greater than anything that has to do with her or Demon 3 or anything. And of course, he's not listening to reason.
Yeah, he's trying to, you know, his, he's just blowing her off. He, you know, stupid human type deal.
He thinks that he's this invulnerable big shot.
Yeah. In the way she puts it, you know, he's asking her where the Demon 3 is. And she's like, the question should be, you should be asking is, why is Hecabe on the planet?
And what are the Shikoi?
And what are the Sharkoi?
I think it was at that point where he started to, or kind of made the moves to kill her or something like that. And then
yeah, that's Rojka he was just in. Getting more and more frustrated.
Yep, Rojka rescues her. Tharz retreats. And did he have other camo elites with him at the time?
Yes. There were, I believe there were three of them, him and two others. They run and escape. They had a drop ship. Apparently, some of his crew rescued a drop ship from his destroyer and came and picked him up.
And he said, tell me more Rojka about the Sharkoi.
Well, Rojka basically goes, I heard you say that Tharz was asking the wrong question. And he looks at the envoy and says, what question should I be asking? And then she does a spiel on the Sharkoi, which, you know, at first he doesn't believe her. But as things go on, then they start believe he starts believing her. At this point in time, the Sorokins actually mount an offensive against the Brutes. And they are actually successful in destroying the ship that's been hanging over the city, the Phobane, by dropping three asteroids on it.
It's so cool how they did that. So they basically took some of their ships that were hidden, dragged asteroids that were in orbit in a target trajectory to hit the ship, and they mentioned that if the ship moved, it'd basically be extinction level explosion. Yeah, pretty much. But they hit their target, all three of them, and the ship goes down.
Yep. And it's the whole maneuver is look over here, not over there, over here. Look this way, over here. You know, they basically are running distraction techniques to make sure that the operators, the sensor operators on the ship, are looking to the left and not to the right.
And it worked brilliantly.
And it did work. Unfortunately, it was too late because Hecabe had already started to release Sharkoi.
Yeah, should we talk about the Vertex?
We can, because it kind of pertains to what is going on.
So, at this point, the artifact that Hecabe found on Installation 01 is the mechanism that allows him to control the Sharkoi. And this thing drills down into your brain and kind of puts you in like kind of this separate network that has other memories of past users in there and kind of a wisp of slush that allows him to actually see through the Sarkoi's eyes. And this thing is very barbaric in nature because it's basically meant to be, if you put this thing on, you're wearing it until you die.
Mm-hmm. It very, very physically interacts with the host. It becomes part of the host's skull.
And it has these weird jut out of metal and everything.
It has tentacles that bore down into your brain to make physical connections.
And it keeps boring down until you just like let go and you become part of the network of other memories that are in there. And there's this voice in the Vertex that basically tells him to relax because he's trying to maintain control. He's trying to control the Sharkoi with his own will, but there's a other presence in there that says, just let it take over. And at that point,
yeah,
he lets it take over, and then he's in full control of the Sharkoi. very gruesome.
Yes, very gruesome. Well, at this point, you can imagine what happens next. He unleashes the Sharkoi on the city, and they pretty much tear through everything. About the only real effective weapon they have against the Sharkoi are high explosives, like rocket launchers.
Yep.
Small arms have no effect on them. It just basically pisses them off. The Spartans are making their way to Soraka. They come across a patrol.
After shooting down a few Banshees and dropships and Phantoms and that stuff.
Well, a couple of Banshees. Let's not oversell this. I mean, come on.
Was it just Banshees? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought there was a dropship or something.
No, there's three Banshees, actually. Adriana takes down one, and the scout team takes down the other two with rocket launchers. They take the gray team captive.
Into custody, essentially.
Which is
ironic.
Funny.
They play along, though.
They play along. They as Jai puts it, above board with them. They get them back to a base. Of course, the governor hears about it. And they meet. The Spartans are talking to the governor about what they know. And about this
basically
time,
got a quick invite with the governor because the person that took them in captivity is obviously they don't like UNSC presence there, but they understand that if a Spartan is there to help with something, there's probably a really bad thing happening.
Yeah.
So smart people on Karo. Rockins are smart people.
There's a lot of vengefulness towards the UNSC. And it's very prevalent throughout the book. They are not happy about UNSC anything, which I find very interesting with the way some of the decisions that were made. But they come up with a plan to take care of the Sharkoi. They figure out that Hecabe is controlling them. So they set up to have Adriana take a sniper shot at him. But while Gray Team is explaining this to the governor, the envoy shows up with Rajka and his elites at the border wanting to come in so they can help. And the Spartans actually vouch for the envoy and the elites, which was kind of interesting because those elites have been trying to kill them. But the envoy convinces Rajka to put that aside and we need to focus on this. So they get the shot set up, they shoot Hecabe, and it disrupts his connection to the Sharkoi, but the Vertex, the helmet that he puts on, actually seals the wound away and compensates for the missing brain matter that bullet took out.
And let's just clarify. The shot that Adriana took went straight through his eye.
It's a Spartan.
No, I mean, the shot obviously is good. I'm just saying, it's like there is a gashing hole in his eye with half of his brain matter being blown out. Yet the Vertex is so invaded into his brain that he's still able to function without half of his brain matter.
Hence the reason I said disrupted his connection. So he survives it. And of course, then he runs down into the Forerunner structure to get out of sight. He's got one of his lieutenants comes up to him and is describing the four or five Sharkoi that surround him as an unparalleled honor guard.
And then he made a stupid comment about being able to join the Banished.
Yeah. This, what is his name? Anyway, he's talking about how are they going to get the Sharkoi off planet. You know, he's basically questioning Hecabe.
Akato? Is that the...
I honestly don't remember right at the moment.
No, that's the thing.
But anyway, you know, Hecabe is impressing upon him that there is a way. They've already taken over some of the human ships that were landing to unload supplies and stuff as, you know, right after they took down the brute ship, the Phobane. The Sharkoi stormed aboard the ships and were able to, with the brute help, take control of them. And now the ships are flying around the planet looking for the Sengele fleet. Or the Tharz, what ships are left of Tharz's.
Right.
Because he plans on taking them to spread the Sharkoi across the solar or across the universe, you know, to express his dominance over everything. But his lieutenant continuously questions him, and he basically finally gets fed up, and he has two of the Sharkoi pull this Yilra Hani apart. And I do mean pull apart. Kind of like you pull taffy apart. Like I said, very graphic.
Yep. Pulled his arms off and basically bled to death. After that, he retreats back into the tunnel that goes down to the Forerunner structure, and they begin to Governor Ellis goes back down to the bunker and starts discussing with her researchers on the way to possibly stop Hecabe, while Rojka and Envoy try to come up with their own plan, which involves talking to Tharz to try to convince him to get his ships out of orbit or to destroy the ship's slipspace drives so that Hecabe couldn't take the Sharkoi off the planet.
Yeah, the Envoy's purpose is basically keep the Sharkoi confined to the planet.
So they come up with that idea. Tharz says, or Rojka says, tells Tharz, you can pick the place. We will come to you to discuss. And Tharz's conditions were to bring the Demon 3 and the Envoy. So they ended up going out there to the rally point where Tharz specified. And, of course, Tharz doesn't come alone. He has an army of 12 or 20 other elites with him. And they completely surround Rojka, and then the Spartans, and the Envoy. And as a gesture of peace, they all lay down their weapons. And Tharz starts to kind of pace around them, not budging at all in the fact that he doesn't really understand the actual threat that's happening. And Rojka and the Envoy are trying to convince him of that. And when he doesn't really seem to budge, that's when a little surprise pops out. Turns out that Rojka still had some of his allied elites walking around in the desert and didn't make it back to Rak. So they secretly conveyed the information to them, and three of his camo elites started taking out Tharz's elites until only Tharz remained.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the point where Rojka said, Tharz, you need to tell your ships to either leave or destroy the engines. And
Tharz, being overconfident, doesn't realize how much trouble they're in.
Right. I think, doesn't he basically say, watch me like thwart these human vessels out of the sky? Because at that point, Hecabe had gotten the Sharkoi and other brutes to take over some of the UNSC Pelicans. So they come flying in, and they seem to be successful at first, but they were not, because they had an interesting tactic of just flying over the ships and then the Sharkoi just raining down on the ships and tearing it apart. And it did not take them very long to get to the control center, because one of the ship masters who was talking to Tharz over his communication device, I think probably within a couple minutes was already killed.
Mm-hmm. It didn't take long. And nope. Of course, they cut back to Tharz that is absolutely dumbfounded. And Rajka has been very restrained because he really wants to kill Tharz. I mean, really wants to kill Tharz. The whole idea behind this meeting and the plan that the Spartans and the elites had was to capture Tharz, take the dropship back to the fleet, and force him to either destroy the ships or get them off planet so that Hecabe could not have access to them.
Right.
But of course, in the fight, the dropship gets destroyed. So they have to try to convince Tharz to destroy the slip place or destroy the ships. And of course he doesn't, because he's got a big head and he thinks he's invincible. And he doesn't believe the Sharkoi exist. And they didn't count on the brutes just flying the ships headlong into the fire and punching through. They had no intention of saving the ships. Once they were over Tharz's fleet, everybody basically just bailed out and jumped, including the brutes. They jumped out and they had jetpacks, where the Sharkoi, they just jumped out.
Yeah.
They don't bounce.
Nope, they just impact.
Yeah,
some bricks. They flew pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think they flew.
No, they just crashed.
So they take over the ships, and then they get back, and they go back to the humans, and they've kind of figured out magically how they could disrupt the connection between Hecabe and the Sharkoi. So they determine that they are going to take their nuclear weapon that they're using as a battery and connect it to a Gauss cannon to make an EMP gun.
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
It works.
Because this is plausible. I'm not a nuclear physicist, so I can't tell you. So they come up with a plan. They do make the gun. And by now, the Spartans and Rajka have returned to the city because their plan failed. They come up with a plan that they're going to take an airdrop into the Forerunner structure. Because who would be crazy enough to airdrop into the enemy's base of operations? Spartans.
Well, they got an idea from somewhere. I mean,
and this is where, what's the stupid bike's name?
Jackrabbit.
The Jackrabbit shows up. So we've not only had Halo 5 references, we've had Halo Wars 2 references as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they mount this Gauss cannon on the back of a Jackrabbit, which is, for those of you that don't know or haven't played Halo Wars, it's basically a backwards three-wheeler. It's got two wheels in front, one wheel in back. They airdrop into the structure. Elise and the envoy go with them, along with a detachment of militia to help try to get the Spartans to Hecabe, which he's in the bottom of this structure. They make it in okay. One of the militia is injured. He breaks a leg. So they just started and they've already got one person down.
Mm-hmm.
The way the structure is constructed, basically you have a long spiral staircase that goes down into the depths. They make their way down to the bottom where they come to a light bridge. And as they approach the bridge, they look across and there are Sharkoi.
Guarding Hecabe.
Yeah, Rajka comes up with a brilliant plan of I'll be the distraction. So he charges in. Of course, that becomes a direct threat to Hecabe. So Hecabe being, I would guess, inexperienced, pulls the Sharkoid back to protect himself, which in turns gives the Spartans an opening to attack. Big fight breaks out.
Rajka stands his own against several Sharkoi.
Hecabe actually starts calling the Sharkoi back to him. And as they're fighting their way across the bridge, this light bridge, he's basically using them as bombs. He has them jumping off the ramp and landing on the bridge. He's basically using them as biobombs, I guess you would call them.
Basically just trying to splatter.
He's trying to stop this attack. But they do manage to get the Gauss Cannon close to him after a fight. They knock out the helmet. And while the Sharkoi are disoriented, the governor runs up, rips the helmet out of Hecabe's head. Very graphically described as well.
Did you mention the EMP?
Yes, I did.
Did they shot? Okay, I dismissed it.
Yeah. They actually shot him twice. Yeah,
yep,
they double-tapped him. And then the whole Gauss Cannon went sparky, sparky. But she pulls the helmet out of his head. They describe him fumbling around looking for something, like the rest of his brain. And then Elise gets the brilliant idea of sticking this thing on her head. And, of course, the same graphic description happens. And yes, there is a lot more that happens during this. This is kind of the abbreviated version of this fight. Elise is actually able to, with the help of what they call the wind. It's basically kind of an impression of the previous wearers, including Hecabe now, guiding her how to control the Sharkoi. And this is one thing that they keep reinforcing the whole way through the book is the fact that Elise hasn't been getting any sleep. She's been running on stimulants for several days.
I think for 5 days at this point.
So relinquishing control to this device is pretty easy for her because she's about to collapse anyway. So she takes control of the Sharkoi. Hecabe manages manages to get a pretty solid shot on Rajka, because Rajka had regrouped and was actually coming after Hecabe. But being basically half a brain and one eye, managed to land a solid swing to the chest with his hammer, enough to break Rajka's combat harness and do some real damage. He turns to attack Elise to get the vertex back. And basically, she stops him with a Sharkoi. The Sharkoi catches the hammer. They grab him and throw him into the lava pit that we just now just told you about, but it was there the whole time. That's how deep this structure is into the crust. It's basically just above the mantle.
Not the responsibility one.
Yeah, not the responsibility one.
The molten mantle.
The molten stuff. She throws him in that, and they describe how he's reflecting on how close he came to achieving his goals as he falls to his death. She manages to detain 3 Spartans and Rajka, where Hecabe couldn't.
And amazing. The envoy.
Well, the envoys, all the Sharkoi's got to do is stand there and say, come on. But anyway.
True.
She starts to call all the Sharkoi back to the facility. Any of them that are close enough. The ones that are aboard the ships, she has them destroy the ships. They basically crash and burn.
And eventually she lets the Spartans and Rochka and them go. And she basically says, I'm taking care of this once and for all.
Yeah.
Protecting my planet.
she's going to detonate the nuclear weapon in 10 minutes. There are several stories below ground, and she gives them 10 minutes to run to the top.
But she gets a little help.
Spartans are fast, but not that fast.
Right. She's just helping them out
a little bit. In the process of this, she, as she gets more control, she actually tells the militia to send a Pelican to help evacuate them. They, you know, jump on the Pelican. The Pelican climbs out of the structure just in time to avoid the blast, but not the EMP. They crash.
They all
and everybody lives. Well,
except
all
the
Spartans live, except the governor.
Well, the pilot lives and the envoy lives.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, so does Rajka.
Yes.
They basically end the book with Rajka returning to Rak, where another one of the Sangheili have basically come to power while him and Tharz duked it out.
So new Kaidan in town.
Yep. And he becomes an envoy for the city-state of Rak. That's how it ends. All in all, it's not a bad book. I enjoyed it. It's some parts of it are kind of long and drawn out, but it does keep a pretty decent pace.
It does. I think for the most part, it's a different read, really long, but mm-hmm. It was an interesting story. It was the writing style didn't quite feel like a Halo writing style. I know it's kind of meant to be a little bit different, but aside from just kind of a different approach to how the Halo story is told, it was a very interesting story, and there's still a little bit at the end, which we haven't touched on yet.
A little bit. Wink, wink. Oh. That has to do with the book I'm listening to right now. But anyway, those of you that have read it will know what I'm talking about. Well, the UNSC comes to collect Melody, the envoy, and the Spartans. Upon arriving aboard the ship, they are greeted with fanfare, applauses, whoops, hollers, and it really throws them for a loop because they weren't expecting that. They were expecting court-martial because of their actions at Glicky. Then they are rushed to a meeting room where they meet with an Oni representative, basically their new handler. And he talks to them about a team they are forming. And I like how Adrian puts this. We don't work well with others.
And that's kind of the point.
This team is a response team to these kinds of situations. More and more Forerunner weapons are popping up. So they're wanting to a fast response team to deal with this. And they say, okay, we'll do it, but we have conditions. The first condition, Mike pipes up and says, we want a prowler. They just want a heavily armed stealth
fast corvette. Ship. Yep.
And Adriana says, so we're partnering up with Covenant. I have an extensive list.
Yeah.
Then they cut away from that conversation and they talk about the envoy and how she's, you know, having trouble dealing with what's happened over the last week and a half. You know, not sleeping, and they actually kind of show more of a human side of Adriana about showing a little compassion for the envoy. And then after that, they cut back to the Oni agent, and he's going back into the conference room. And when he enters the conference room, there's somebody there. One Saren Osman.
Yeah. The
current Chinkoni of Oni. And they discuss the costs associated with having Gray Team on this particular expedition that they're putting together. And she basically says, if they want it, get it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are people that are more compatible with the team, but that's not what I want. I want to have assets in place in case the Sangheili decide that they don't want to be friends anymore.
Call it an insurance policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Especially for events. I guess this is technically just before Halo 5? Or after Halo 5? Before, probably.
Let's see. I forget what the release date was on it.
I mean, from a timeline perspective. Because Halo 5 was 2558.
Yeah. Well, this was before Halo 5. I'm just trying to...
Pins, you still here? You have your timeline? You have your timeline available somewhere?
Well, according to this, the book was released in 2000. That doesn't sound right, though.
The book was not released in 2000. It was released in 2017.
Yeah.
But I mean, Audible, more from...
You need to fix your stuff.
I mean, from the chronological, like, in-universe story.
No, it is definitely before Halo 5, because they're hinting at the Guardians in the book.
You think that's what Osmond's hinting at?
Uh-huh. And I believe it was a lead-up to them as well.
Okay.
You know, it was a lead-up to Halo 5.
That makes sense.
But, yeah.
Envoy is September of 2558. So when is Halo 5? October. Wow, a month.
Yeah. Like I said.
Makes sense.
It's pretty close.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, so that's interesting. Sharkoi. New threat. Yeah, overall, the book was, again, very different writing style, but I do like how it was a little bit isolated of a story.
Mm-hmm. And
there was even a map that came with the book, too. So after you read everything, you can see where all the events took place on this planet. This is one of the only books I think... I mean, there's some other books that do this, but one of the only books that really pertain to a very linear time frame in a very short amount of time and in a very specific location. Because for a lot of other books, there's a little bit of jumping around as far as time lines or jumping around locations. Most of them. Not all of them. And it was very interesting to see some of the different dynamics with how the elites behaved.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rajka behaved and Tharis behaved.
No, we're still in that area where there's a lot of tensions between the peoples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the two different peoples.
Yep. So we're done with Envoy. We'll be doing another book here in another month or so. I'll be putting out a poll for what we should be doing next as far as books go. Is there anything, any two books you want to recommend up again? I think what Silent Storm was.
Yeah, we'll discuss that at a later date. I'm a little brain fried right now.
It's a lot in that book.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get a pull out for you guys this week and to vote on the next book that we'll be reading for the show. And we'll go from there. But thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be catching up more on our Outpost adventures next week and diving into a couple of those articles that we had to skip over for this week to get back on track. But we will hopefully see some of you guys tomorrow for our Frag and Friday. You can check that out over on Mixer, YouTube, and Twitch at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can check us right back here again on Sunday at 10 p.m. for My Human Streams. And we'll be picking back up every week for Thursday at 9 p.m. for the podcast. Since it is past midnight for both of us, it is time for us to go to bed. Well, past midnight for me, past 11 for DT. It's time for us to go to bed, so short outro tonight. Thanks again for listening. Catch you all next week. Keep on fragging them trucks.